You tell me. Hare Krishna. So, there's a lot that's happened since yesterday's class. 3 whole chapters. The story that this most of this Bhagavatam is dedicated to is a discussion between Kapila Muni and his mother, Devahuti. But before Kapila Muni is manifest, the Bhagavatam narrates the story of how Kardama Muni, his father, met his mother and married his mother, and ultimately he appeared from the womb of Devahuti, from the semen of Kardama. So here we have a story within a story again, because Maitreya and Vidura are continuing to speak, and Sukadev Goswami has continued to narrate their conversation. So Sukadev Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Parikit. He's narrating the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. And in so doing, he is telling the story of Devahuti and Kardama. So we have a story within a story within a story. 3 layers. So Vidura is asking Maitreya, because he knew that Svayambhuva Manu had been asked by Lord Brahma to propagate the universe. Several people were. Several of Lord Brahma's children were asked in that way. And here we're talking about the branch coming from Svayambhuva Manu. So Svayambhuva Manu was asked to propagate the universe, and in so doing, he had a daughter, Devahuti, who was highly qualified. Kardama Muni also knew that his responsibility was also to propagate the universe. So even though he was an ascetic, by nature he was a yogi, he wasn't so inclined towards grihastha life. But still, in his heart of hearts, he knew that he had this responsibility, and he prepared for that responsibility by doing great tapasya, austerity. It's interesting to note here that he knew in the future he wanted to get married, and so what he did is, for a very long time, he performed austerity so that he would be qualified. He didn't necessarily get a degree, make sure that he had upward mobility, or that he was targeting a good audience where he could sell his product. But rather, he performed austerity so that he would be able to enter within the water, or enter within the grihastha sphere, and yet not lose his perspective and become confused about the ultimate goal of life. So in order to do that, he needed to get his senses, his mind, his intelligence under control. And he did severe austerities. But even though he did severe austerities, still he knew he had a responsibility, and he thought, well, as long as I'm going to get married, I might as well get married to someone qualified and someone who has the qualities that will satisfy my whatever material desire I still have. And so he began to pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for a union that would be satisfactory, a wife that would be satisfactory. And Vishnu appeared before him, and after some exchange of blessings and prayers, Vishnu agreed, yes, don't worry about it, I already have it together. I already knew what was in your heart, because I'm already there. So I already know that you're looking for a wife, and somebody will come, Svayambhuva Manu will come in 2 days, and he'll present you with a perfect person. So, koi baat nahi, no problem. He was peaceful then, because he knew that Krishna had his welfare in mind, and that he was in his heart, and he was, you can imagine, that's a faith-building experience. When Krishna appears before you and says, I know what you want already, and I've got it covered. Don't worry. So with that in mind, then he went back to finish up his austerities, a couple of more days, And sure enough, just as predicted, Svayambhuva Manu arrived on the scene with his highly qualified, very beautiful daughter. Anybody, you read this section? Or didn't read this material? So, it's interesting because when Svayambhuva Manu appears with his wife and also his daughter, she's very shy and not really in front. He's really in front, and he's speaking with Kardama. And first they exchange pleasantries. They both glorify each other. Even though Kardama Muni is a Brahmin and highly qualified yogi and ascetic, and Svayambhuva Manu is a king or an emperor, and he's involved in material life because he's ruling, still both of them treat each other with the utmost of respect. You'll read about another king and ascetic in the next canto of the Bhagavatam where they didn't quite treat each other as nicely. And it was a disaster, Daksha and Lord Shiva. So, but here we have Svayambhuva Manu appreciating Kardama Muni's aestheticism and his qualification, and that even though he was a little dirty because he was doing aesthetic, he was effulgent, and his eyes were clear and powerful, especially because he had just seen the Supreme Lord, and it's described that the Lord was so pleased with his prayer and his presentation and the way he approached him, because even he was approaching him for a material thing. He was saying, I want to have a wife. Could you fix me up with somebody? And that's a material thing. It's not exactly, could you give me, the ultimate goal of human life? He was saying, I need to have a wife. Vishwanath Chakravarti, Jiva Goswami explains in his Sandarbhas that, Kardama Muni wasn't really asking for a material thing because he had a service to do, and he knew what his service was, and he couldn't do his service without a wife. So in a sense, he was asking for the facilities necessary to do his service. So it wasn't totally mundane, but there was a touch of desire that he didn't want to just marry anyone. He wanted to marry someone who was beautiful and who was very qualified in so many ways, someone who had a similar temperament that he did, and Prabhupada goes to some lengths in those purports to explain how to get married. We're going to do a seminar at our ashram, the women's ashram, sorry guys, and it's called How Not to Marry a Jerk. So, it's handy information. And Kardama Muni knew just how not to marry a jerk. He went to Krishna, and he prayed to Krishna to please get him someone that was very qualified. And Krishna took care of everything. And for Devahuti, she also knew how not to marry a jerk. She approached her father. Her father took care of everything. He looked for a very qualified person. And he found someone who was very, very qualified. And he mentioned to Kardama that Devahuti had already, through hearing about his good qualities from Narada, she'd already given her heart to him. So even though she hadn't met him, she was already meditating on him as a very qualified person, someone she would really like to have a relationship with. So everything was perfect because Devahuti was already contemplating Kardama. Kardama Muni was in the hands of Vishnu, who was already arranging the relationship. Svayambhuva Manu was the son of Lord Brahma and who was arranging everything for his daughter. So everything was pukka. No problems. So many of the purports in that chapter 21 and even 22 describe, how to get married, the difference between grihastha life and grihamedi life, which is very important. Grihastha life, one when husband and wife work together to serve the Supreme Person. And first Krishna, and then Prabhupada develops the idea that Svayambhuva Manu was actually a perfect example. Because after he gives his daughter to Kardama, he goes back and he rules his kingdom, but he's always fixed in the supreme goal of human life, the supreme personality of Godhead. He encourages his citizens to do the same. So his mentality is 100% focused. And even though, he's a householder, he's still completely absorbed in the goal of life. And when his householder life comes to an end, he's able to achieve spiritual perfection, no hindrance. And Prabhupada explains that the Grihamedi is in it for them. And we see that as this in it for me, what's in it for me, in teaching circles we call it with him, what's in it for me, that everybody considers with him. Whenever you offer them anything, they're thinking, what's in it for me? So when we advertise about even Krishna, we have to make sure that we hit a with him. What's in it for me? Oh, well, you can become self-realized, or you can become happy, or you can become healthy, or it's cheap, it's free, it's good, it's wholesome. Something to get them. We don't say, this is spiritual food, Bhagavad Prasadam, we offered it to God, and it's purifying. Because they don't, that's not for them, that's not a with them. They don't get that. So we try to find something, what's in it for me. So when that mentality gets out of whack, when it takes over, then, and when one is in the bodily concept of life, then what's in it for me is this body. And so the thought process, what's in it for me is, what will make this body feel good? How can I get pleasure and avoid suffering? So the Griha Medhi, his mentality, or her mentality, is how can I arrange a relationship which will give me sense gratification, me meaning the body. Because that's their identification. That's all they know is the body as the self. And so they're looking for sense gratification. And that's why you see that people come together. In the Bhagavatam, it says people come together for a short period of time, and then like the ocean takes the sea animals off the shore and back into the sea when the tide goes in and out. It's temporary. But now it's become really temporary. Right? Even a material lifetime can't be offered to one person. Because people are so, what's in it for me, that as soon as there's any kind of difficulty, then immediately, okay, next. I'll leave you and next. Prabhupada speaks in these purports, and sometimes he says, if the relationship between a husband and wife is not suitable for spiritual life, you should leave the family and you should go to the forest. He never says you should leave this family and go to another. Right? If you find that your spiritual life is impeded, and that you better be very careful about, because Prahlad Maharaj didn't find that Hiranyakashipu was impeding his spiritual life. He somehow managed. So if your relationship with your partner is not as bad as Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad, then maybe you should think twice before you go walking. And if you're going to go walking, walk into the forest, if you can find one. You can't go walking into another social scene where you're again canvassing for another wife. This is, or another husband. This is not acceptable, but very common, right? So Prabhupada, it speaks in these chapters about the differences between the mentality of someone who is in an ashram. What does the word ashram mean? Anyone know? Shelter. So ashraya, right? A shelter. So ashram, shelter. That means that you are going to be sheltered from some aspect of material life. When the hurricane comes, we seek shelter. And we don't look for any shelter. We look for a shelter that will be suitable considering the heavy wind and the heavy rain and all the problem we have. Something that may be a shelter like an umbrella. In a light rain, a shelter is maybe an umbrella. But in a hurricane, an umbrella won't do the trick. We have to have some solid shelter. So sometime in our spiritual life, we find that we need a shelter. And although we have other shelters, we need a specific shelter in order to be peaceful and happy. And Grihastha ashram is sometimes that shelter. If it's an ashram, if two people are working together to achieve spiritual perfection. And certainly Svayambhuva Manu was doing that, and he's brought up in these chapters as someone who is an example of that. And then the story shifts back to Kardama and Devahuti. And Kardama was a very severe ascetic. And Devahuti was a very wealthy, very beautiful princess. She had been taken care of, you can imagine, in a way that was, she was very wealthy, she was wearing beautiful jewels, and her mother, it's explained that her mother, when she went, and the marriage was arranged between her and Kardama, then the mother, she gave so many things. She gave lots of gold jewelry, and she gave beautiful saris. And then they went away, and Devahuti began to serve her husband, who was meditating and doing austerities. And Devahuti, it's described, became emaciated. She became very skinny, and she became a little dirty looking, a bit dusty because they were bathed. You know, if you ever saw cloth that was bathed in the river, washed in the river on a regular basis, even though it's washed every day, it doesn't look very clean, right? And if it's white, it really doesn't look very clean anymore. It just from the river water, you get this kind of dull brown color. If you wash your clothes in Gita Nagari, it turns rust color, because the water is rust color. So problems are there even when we wash. So Devahuti was taking, she was clean inside and out, but she appeared to be kind of clouded over by the fact that her hair was not combed. She was no longer putting oils and perfumes on her body like she had before, and she wasn't wearing any ornaments or any beautiful clothing, and very, very dedicatedly, very, very seriously serving her husband. This exchange between the husband and wife is compared to the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple. We have this comparison also in the story of Pachinibharishat, when he hears about Paranjana, right? And then Paranjana takes birth as a woman, and in his next life, her husband leaves, and she laments and laments and laments at his funeral pyre. And it's described like that, that when the spiritual master leaves, the disciple should lament like anything. I have personal experience. So in this case also, that analogy is there. And Kardama was perfectly serving his spiritual master, and Devahuti was perfectly serving her spiritual master. In a way, that's considered first-class intelligent. Anyone know what this first-class intelligent definition? First-class, second-class, third-class? Yes, Chaitanya? Right. First-class intelligent means I can understand what it is that the person I'm serving wants without them having to ask me. I know the situation so well, I understand the heart so well, that I do it without having to be asked. Second-class intelligence is I'm asked, and then I do it with a happy heart. Thank you very much. I'll do it. Third class intelligence is I'm asked and I do it, but my heart is not so happy. I'm a little bit, but I do it, and I do it nicely, but still there's a little bit of like, who is he to ask me to do that? You know, okay, I'll do it. It's for Krishna anyway. So then I do it. And then fourth class intelligence is I don't do it at all. I get asked and I don't do it. So I don't want to do it. I don't want to serve. I don't want to do it. So this is, Devahuti was first-class intelligent, and so was Kardama Muni, both serving their spiritual preceptors, each of them, with the intelligence. They were so connected that they never talked. Kardama Muni was always in meditation. Devahuti was rendering service. There was no conversation, no emails, no Facebook, no cell phone, nothing. No communication on that level. Their communication was deeper. It's described that Devahuti served Kardama with great intimacy. So generally we think of intimacy as this physical closeness, this sexual kind of connotation. But here, the intimacy was that her mind was so absorbed in him that she could figure out what he wanted and what he needed and take care of it without him having to say anything. And in her doing that, he was simultaneously developing such a deep sense of appreciation and compassion and affection for her because of her serving mood, that when it came to the point where she felt like she needed to have children, she asked him for something. He was immediately encouraged to do so, or He immediately provided good facility for that. And when I say good facility, I mean good facility, right? He built a multi-story aerial mansion from his mystic power. And it's described, it was made out of diamonds and all kinds of beautiful jewels. And it was, you know, far out. It was beyond imagination. And he took her all over the place. For many, many years, they traveled and traveled, and they went to all the sites, and, they probably saw Niagara Falls and Mount Rushmore and God knows where else, Grand Canyon. Well, who knows where they went, but Disney World, maybe, you know. So they went to all the sites in the heavenly planets and all over. He took her everywhere. And they relished their time together then in a very, close way. And then she, wanted children. Oh, by the way, when, before she even got in the mansion, because she saw this gorgeous mansion and she thought, well, I'm really a mess. You know, my hair's all matted. My clothes are not very nice. I'm kind of gray. And so he told her to go into Bindu Sarovara. And now this is interesting because if someone told you, well, you don't look so good. Why don't you walk into the ocean? That instruction would be a little bit uncomfortable, perhaps, but she didn't hesitate for a minute. He told her, he could sense, again, with his first-class intelligence, he was able to perceive her want, her need, and so he told her, go into the Bindu Sarovara, and she went in. And there, waiting for her, were thousands of maid servants. And they massaged her body with oils, they decorated her beautifully, and she regained immediately her original beauty, even more. And then she came out and she was first class, okay, and then went on the aerial mansion, and then I already told you, they went flying around. And then he expanded himself 9 times, he gave her 9 daughters. Because don't forget, these were Prajapatis, so daughters are the ones who have children. And so 9 daughters married 9 sages, and they were able to make many, many children. And then he had asked one benediction when their marriage was arranged. And the benediction that he requested was that she would let him go to perfect his life as soon as he gave her children. So he gave her 9 daughters, and she thought, uh-oh, he's getting ready to leave. And then she went to him again. And she said to him, you have given me 9 wonderful children, but you have not given me fearlessness. And I'm a fool, because you asked me what I wanted, and I told you I wanted children. But I should have asked you for self-realization. I should have asked you for liberation. Here you are, such a great sage, such a wonderful devotee of Krishna, that Krishna himself arranged our marriage. And yet I neglected to ask you for the ultimate goal of human life. And I asked you instead for children. So now, before you leave, I'm asking you for fearlessness. And it's described in the ideal world, which doesn't really exist anymore, that a woman, fearlessness for a woman is that she'll be taken care of by her qualified grown-up sons. So Kardama Muni ensured Devahuti, don't worry, your son is going to be the most qualified because he's going to be God. He's going to be an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I already got previews of the coming attractions from Vishnu when he spoke to me before, and what he told me was that Krishna is going to be born to us. Now, what you need to do now is you need to perform austerities and meditate on the Supreme Lord, and then Krishna will take birth in your womb. So she did that, again, without question. She immediately went into meditation and began to become absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then their union bore Kapiladev. And that's kind of where we come to the verse that we're talking about today. So here we are in Canto 3, Chapter 24, Text Number 5. Do we chant this verse? Repeat this? Yeah, as I like. Okay. Maitreya uvacha. Devahutyapi sandesham. Gurvena prajapate. Samyak shradhaya purusham, kutastam ahajat gurum. Do you chant or no? Huh? Devahutyapi sandesham. Gauravena Prajapate. Sam Dakshadhaya Purusham. Kutastam Abhajat Gurum. Maitreya Uvacha. Devahutyapi Sandesham. Gauravena Prajapate. Samyakshadhaya Purusham. Kutustam Abhajat Gurum. One more. Maitreya Uvacha. Devahutyapi Sandesham. Gauravena Prajapate. Samyaksham Purusham. Kutasam Abhijat Gurum. So Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya said.
Devahuti.
Devahuti.
Api, also, Sandesham, the direction, Gauravena, with great respect, Prajapati, of Kardama, Samyak, complete, Shadhaya, having faith in, Purusham, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kuta, situated in everyone's heart. Abhajat, worshipped. Gurum, most worshipable. Translation. Sri Maitreya said, Devahuti was fully faithful and respectful toward the direction of her husband. What was the direction of her husband? Yeah, perform austerities and meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kardama. So the direction of her husband Kardama, who was one of the Prajapatis or generators of human beings in the universe. O great sage, she thus began to worship the master of the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was situated in everyone's heart. You want to read? Or somebody want to read? Do you want to read? The purport? Who's got the mic?
Herbert, this is the process of spiritual realization. One has to receive instruction from a bona fide spiritual master. Kardama Muni was Devahuti's husband, but because he instructed her on how to achieve spiritual perfection, he naturally became her spiritual master also. There are many instances wherein the husband becomes the spiritual master. Lord Shiva also is the spiritual master of his consort, Parvati. A husband should be so enlightened that he should become the spiritual master of his wife in order to enlighten her in the advancement of Krishna consciousness. And generally, woman is less intelligent than man. Therefore, if the husband is intelligent enough, the woman gets a great opportunity for spiritual enlightenment.
Here it is clearly said, Samyak Shraddhaya, that with great faith one should receive knowledge from the spiritual master and with great faith execute the performance of service. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita has especially stressed the instruction of the spiritual master. One should accept the instruction of the spiritual master as one's life and soul, whether one is liberated or not liberated. One should execute the instruction of the spiritual master with great faith. It is also stated that the Lord is situated in everyone's heart. One does not have to seek the Lord outside. He is already there. One simply has to concentrate on one's worship in good faith as instructed by the bona fide spiritual master, and one's efforts will come out successfully. It is also clear that the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not appear as an ordinary child. He appears as He is. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, He appears by His own internal potency, Atma Maya. And how does He appear? He appears when pleased by the worship of a devotee. A devotee may ask the Lord to appear as her son. The Lord is already sitting within the heart, and if he
comes out from the body, The Lord is already sitting within the heart, and if he comes out
from the body of a devotee, it does not mean that the particular woman becomes his mother in the material sense. He is always there, but in order to please his devotee, he appears as her son.
So of course, the topic is, are women less intelligent? You notice it's only one line in the whole purport, but somehow, even though the purport says a lot of other things, we're supposed to talk about that. And of course, I'm a perfect example, but I'll make some effort. So here we go. First of all, we should look at what the definition of his intelligence is, right? Because intelligence has absolutely nothing to do with this thing called IQ, intelligence quotient, where you take a bunch of tests and then they calculate all the way you look at or answer various indicators, and then they calculate how smart you are. It has nothing to do with that. So if we go back to Bhagavad Gita and we remember how Lord Krishna describes the relationship between the body and the mind and the intelligence, we have a conjure up in your brain a picture of a chariot. Right? Yantra, Rudrani, Mayaya. And his idea of a machine is this chariot. So you have the horses that are the senses, and you have the reins, which are the mind. And then supposed to be holding the reins is the intelligence. So what is mind? What is intelligence? Everybody knows what senses are, pretty much, right? Because we feel them all the time. They push, they pull, they drag. The senses are always looking for something. They're actually very active all the time, and they always want to be fed. The mouth wants to be fed, but the eyes also wants to be fed, and the nose wants to be fed, and the ears want to be fed. Especially we see people always listening to things. They're always plugged into things and always looking for something attractive to look at. We're very appreciative when we see an attractive, especially another body that's attractive. We become very, the eyes become drawn in that direction. So we have all the senses that the skin, the touch, likes to feel something soft. They make these polyester fibers that people like to just squish them. You know, they make these like pillows and things that are just squishy, and people just like to squish them. And because they feel good. It feels good in your hands to just squish these things. So all our senses are calling like that. They want something. And the mind's job is to go for it, to figure out what's the shortest distance between that object that my senses want and this body that I'm serving. So just like a baby, because a baby has no intelligence, if a baby sees an object which is attractive to its senses, it immediately goes, right? Immediately puts it in everything in the mouth, everything in the somewhere, right? Everything has to be played with. And there's no intelligence to filter, so the parents have to be the intelligence, because otherwise the child will hurt themselves or drink something which is poisonous. So then the intelligence comes into play. And what does the intelligence do? The intelligence is supposed to act as a filter between the mind and long-term goals or goals. You know, we can say to someone, you know, everybody in college, are you goal-oriented? Everyone's goal-oriented. Everyone's got a goal. You're told by Covey and other great soothsayers of the truth that you're supposed to have your goals in life written down by the time you're in high school so that you can march straight to where you want to go, right? So if you're goal-oriented, then your intelligence will try to control the mind and the senses to allow you to get to the goal. That's why you're all in college, right? You're all at the university. Most of you, not all of you, but most of you at the university. And the reason is because somewhere along the line, somebody told you that if you want to really achieve success in life, you got to have a college degree. Otherwise, what are you going to do with yourself? So maybe they didn't say it with that accent. Maybe they said, What are you going to do with yourself? So this is the intelligence. The intelligence is the barrier. Even when I was studying psychology way long time ago when the dinosaurs roamed the earth, there was this idea that people who were less intelligent were people who couldn't set goals. They didn't have any long-term ability to control their short-term desires. For instance, you have a bum on the Bowery, and he wants to enjoy as quickly as possible. So his goal is just to get enough money to buy a bottle of wine and then drink it. And then he just, you know, zones out. And he's in ecstasy. Mode of ignorance, here I come. And so he can't think, well, you know, maybe I should get a job, then I should get a house, and then I could drink in private, and I could lay on a nicer bed, I could get a better quality wine. He doesn't think like that. He just thinks, I want mode of ignorance ASAP, so therefore I'm just going to take enough time out of my busy sleeping schedule to wash sufficient numbers of windows so that I can raise sufficient $1.38 and I can go buy some cheap wine and that'll do the trick. It'll knock me out. Whereas you have people who are a little bit more intelligent and they can put that off. They can say, well, no, actually, I want to have a wife and I'd like to have a roof over my head. I don't want to sleep on the street. So therefore, I will get a job. Now, I'm not motivated enough to maybe get a big education, get a big job. Maybe I'll just, you know, do something simple, manual, just what I know how to do. So I'll just go do something, and I'll get some money. And then more and more, we find that as people move up the socioeconomic ladder to success, right, they can put distance between their goals in life. Their immediate sense gratification. I'm saving up so I can have a vacation in the future. I'm going to school for 9 years so I can be a doctor or a surgeon or a lawyer or an Indian chief. And that way I'll be able to have better sense gratification. I'll have a bigger house. I'll have a better car. I'll have two houses. I'll have, you know, better everything, whatever is happens to be better by then, because it's probably not better now, but it'll be better then. And then I'll get it, whatever it is. I'll buy it. I'll earn it. So this is intelligence. And when you talk about, it's interesting, I did some research on the folio. Prabhupada says less intelligent 1,028 times. Maso menos, you know. So 1,028 hits on the phrase less intelligent. Now if you add to it less intelligent woman and you do a search, it comes out to 11. And if you look at those 11, none of them just say unintelligent woman. They all say less intelligent women, sudras, and mercantile men. Now, if you look around you in this material world, you will find that everybody walking the street is a mercantile man. Everybody. Nobody isn't. Very, very, I mean, samahatma sudurlabha. Right? Such a great soul is very rare that doesn't have the goal of human life to be some kind of mercantile exchange. Now, it may be incognito, and it may be, you know, green, or it may be recycled, or it may be vegan, or it may be, you know, shrouded in some kind of bhakti or yoga. But it's a mercantile goal. I want my senses to be happy, I want to be peaceful, I want to be no suffering, or at least as little suffering as possible. I want to be beautiful, and I want to be beautiful for as long as possible. Therefore, you know, when my teeth start to fall out, I'll get new ones, and if my eyes are the wrong color, I'll make them bluer, and if my hair is the wrong color, I'll either, you know, something to it. I'll make it another color, I'll spike it, or I'll something to it. And even matting it, or, you know, something that appears to be kind of quasi-spiritual, it's really all about this body and me and how I can fix myself up. So if it gives any women any solace, don't worry, you're not alone. The whole world is less intelligent. Right? The whole world is less intelligent. It used to be that male persons would pursue spiritual life with great determination, just like Kardama. And a woman could, with no reservations, follow that saintly soul and be taken care of and go back to Godhead. It's the express, right? You get on the elevator and the spiritual master just takes you back to Godhead. It's nice, right? But in this day and age, we tend to hear all about the less intelligent woman part, but we don't hear, can you scroll that down a little bit? Up, yeah, that's up. Scroll down. Okay, so here we go. There are many instances whereas the husband becomes the spiritual master. Lord Shiva is, maybe. Oh, because he instructed her how to achieve spiritual perfection, he naturally became her spiritual master. Lord Shiva also is a spiritual master of his consort Parvati. A husband should be so enlightened that he should become the spiritual master of his wife in order to enlighten her in the advancement of Krishna consciousness. Right? So we hear all about the part where the women should be more or less intelligent, or they are less intelligent, but we don't hear so much about the part where, what's the responsibility of the spiritual master, of the, so therefore, an intelligent woman or man will connect with someone who is an appropriate spiritual guide. And once someone does that, then he's alpamated. He's very intelligent. Su durlaba. Samahatma sudurlaba. Such a great soul is very rare. Not just rare, but very rare. Manushanam sahasresu. Out of many thousands of men or women, only one will have sufficient intelligence to seek out somebody who is self-realized and follow them. That's the second hard part, the following part. Following is difficult. No one wants to follow in this day and age. Everybody wants to be number one. Number one. So the idea is that, and Prabhupada says in several places, especially there's a famous quote in the, I believe it's the Madhyalila, I have it referenced here somewhere. Adi Leela, 7th chapter, 31st verse, 31st and 32nd. He says, these girls are as good as their male counterparts because they're sacrificing everything to take up the process of Krishna consciousness. So a person, male or female, who takes up the process of Krishna consciousness is very rare. Very rare soul. And a person who doesn't, who wants to be in a mercantile life, those are everywhere. So in this age of Kali, don't get too puffed up. Because men and women are less intelligent. They're absorbed in the bodily concept of life. And the reason that women are spoken of amongst those categories of less intelligent, how many of you have ever walked or recently walked into a big department store like JCPenney or Sears or something? If you go in there, you'll see that a good part of the first floor is dedicated to makeup. It's weird, right? It's dedicated to falsification of the body to make it look better. Now men are also getting into these things, dyeing their hair and so many things. But this has been the tradition of women for many, many, many years. That no matter what it is that I have, my parabdha karma, whatever it looks like, it's not good enough. And my energy is dedicated to that. That is less intelligent. Because my energy is going towards nurturing the body, and it's not going towards putting off my bodily comfort for the ultimate goal of human life, which is what Devahuti did, and which is what everyone here is doing, and which is what any male or female who is taking to the process of Krishna consciousness is doing. So, are women less intelligent? Well, they can be less intelligent, and men can also be less intelligent. In this age of Kali, everyone is less intelligent. Mandaksu manda matayo, right? They're lazy, misguided, unfortunate, prone to quarrel, miserable, short life. What else can you say, right? It's a mess. So, don't be discouraged because We have the process of self-realization. We have the process of Krishna consciousness. And if we follow a perfect spiritual master, either in the form of a good spiritualized, self-realized husband or a good self-realized spiritual master in the form of diksha or shiksha, then we can become go back to Godhead. We can become pure devotees of Krishna, just like Devahuti did. So I think I'm supposed to stop at 8:30 sharp, isn't it? Yes, no, maybe so. Okay, so I can talk till breakfast comes in. Oh, I would have to ask questions. Okay, questions. Yes, Haribol. He has the mic and everything already. Go ahead.
Thank you for the class. It was really very enlightening. My question is, Mataji, so you talk about there is everybody is equal, everybody is less intelligent. That's good. But...
Well, I'm glad you're happy. Yeah. Yes.
But the point is like, but you didn't say that... A wife can also be a self-realized wife can also be a spiritual master.
Yes, it's true. Prabhupada even said, actually, my god sister Jamuna was married to Guru Das. And Guru Das asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, what should I do if my wife is more advanced than I am? And he said, follow her. So it is possible. And we see it again and again. Look at Ravana, Mandodari. She was more intelligent than Ravana. She told him a million times, give Sita back to Ram. You are going to lose everything if you don't give Sita back to Ram. Gandhari was far more intelligent than Dhritarashtra. She kept telling him, this is a mistake. What are you doing? Give the land back to the Pandavas. What? Why are you causing... But he couldn't hear. He couldn't hear. It goes on. There's so many stories of women who were... trying to guide their not-so-bright husbands, and sometimes were unsuccessful, sometimes were more successful. So, yes, it's true that if a woman is intelligent and spiritually advanced, she will know how to make her husband think that he's more intelligent, even though he may not be. But she will make him think that way and feel that way. Prabhupada even says it. Men like to think, in one purport in these verses, he says, men like to think that they are more intelligent, and an intelligent woman will make him think that way. Hare Krishna.
I was recently reading in a purport that Prabhupada said what it means in the scriptures when it says that women are less intelligent, it means that they're generally more materialistic.
That's right. It means what it means for anyone.
Generally.
Generally, right. And for anyone who's less intelligent, what it means is that they're more materialistic. They cannot put off their material sense gratification long enough to pursue spiritual life. They don't like austerity. And therefore, they're less intelligent. Yes. What's your name, Prabhu?
My name is Damodar.
Damodar. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. If we take that definition, then a woman who's a devotee is more intelligent than all the karmi men.
That's true. Exactly. That's true. Because all karmi men are pursuing, by your definition, karmi. That's actually a misnomer, by the way. To call people karmis is a misnomer. These people aren't that advanced. That's right. Because if they were karmis, they would be following the Vedic literature and performing activities which would elevate them, but they're not performing activities that will elevate them. So actually calling them karmis is a compliment.